everyone. Welcome back to Unzip, where we crack open the latest AI and ML research and figure out what actually matters. Big thanks to our sponsors keeping this show running, Ada, which bridges the gap between research and production AI, Ago Consulting, pronounced Ago, your go-to for silicon development from AI chips to full ZOC designs, and Zen Seeming Tuchter, an umbrella company spanning the silicon industry, with Ada in their portfolio, helping businesses deploy AI at scale through their Glow compiler. Today, we're unpacking five papers covering demographic bias localization in LLMs, a genuinely new axis for generative model pre-training, file system-based agent memory, chemistry literature search, and trust-aware memory for multi-agent systems. Lots to get into. Let's go. All right, first up, we've got a paper called Fairness Pruning: Locating Demographic Bias in GLUMLP Layers via Differential Activations. And honestly, the title is doing a lot of work here, so let me unpack it. The core problem is one we've been wrestling with in AI for years. Large language models encode demographic biases, meaning they treat prompts differently depending on whether they mention, say, a man versus a woman, or different racial groups. We know this happens, but the harder question is where exactly in the model is that bias living? The researchers focus on something called GLU architectures that stands for gated linear units, which are the feed-forward layers you find in a ton of modern transformers, including LLM-style models. These layers have this gate mechanism that controls which information flows through, and the hypothesis here is that demographic bias might be specifically encoded in the neurons inside these layers. Their method, which they call fairness pruning, is actually pretty elegant in its simplicity. They create what they call minimally contrastive prompt pairs, basically two prompts that are identical except for a demographic attribute. So you might have the doctor, who is a man, versus the doctor, who is a woman. Then they run both prompts through the model at inference time and capture the neuron activations for each. The key insight is differential activations. Neurons that fire significantly differently between the two prompts are flagged as likely carrying that demographic signal. This is causal bias localization, meaning they're not just measuring output bias, they're trying to find the source of it structurally inside the network. What makes this exciting is the word pruning in the title. The long-term vision here is that once you've identified these bias neurons, you can surgically remove or suppress them without having to retrain the whole model. This is a lightweight structural intervention, and that's a huge deal practically because retraining frontier LLMs costs millions of dollars. For practitioners, the implication is significant. If this approach holds up and generalizes, you could imagine a workflow where you audit a fine-tuned model for bias, identify the offending neurons in the GLUMLP layers, and prune or dampen them as a post-processing step. That's a much more tractable fairness intervention than what most teams are doing today, which is often just hoping instruction tuning fix things. The paper frames this as foundational empirical validation. They're not claiming to have solved bias. They're claiming to have found a reliable way to locate it. And honestly, localization is the harder problem. Once you know where the bias leaves, mitigation becomes a more tractable engineering challenge. Keep an eye on this one, especially as GLU-based architectures continue to dominate the landscape. Okay, paper two is one that genuinely made me stop and reread the abstract a couple times because the claim is bold. It's called explorative modeling, unlocking a third pre-training axis and end-to-end generation. The authors, Alexei Gladstone, Heng Ji, and Yilin Du, are making an argument that generative AI has a fundamental training limitation that nobody has really fixed yet. Here's the setup. The deep learning revolution was largely about end-to-end training. Before AlexNet and friends, people would hand-design features, edge detectors, histogram features, whatever, and then train a classifier on top. End-to-end training blew that away because you let the model learn everything jointly, and the learned representations were way better. But generative modeling, despite being incredibly powerful, has actually not been trained end-to-end. Think about diffusion models, autoregressive models, flow-based models. They all factor the generation procedure into stages or steps. A diffusion model learns to denoise. An autoregressive model learns to predict the next token. These are decompositions of the generation problem, and the authors argue this decomposition is a limitation. The reason factoring has persisted is that generative modeling is fundamentally about handling distributions with many modes, meaning the real world has tons of valid outputs for any given input, and that's hard. Existing scalable approaches handle this by breaking the problem into smaller tractable pieces, but that factoring prevents true end-to-end optimization. Their proposed solution is what they call explorative modeling, which introduces a third pre-training axis. To understand this, think about the existing two axes: scale, more compute, more data, bigger models, and architecture, transformers, SSMs, etc. They're arguing there's a third axis, which is the training objective itself, specifically one that enables end-to-end generation rather than factored generation. The core idea seems to be training models to explore the space of possible outputs more directly, rather than factoring that exploration into sequential steps. This is philosophically connected to ideas in reinforcement learning where you want to explore a space, not just predict the next step. Why does this matter? If end-to-end training of generative models is actually achievable and produces better representations, the downstream implications for image generation, video, audio, and multimodal models could be substantial. The history of deep learning strongly suggests that end-to-end beats staged pipelines, so this theoretical framing is compelling. For practitioners, this is more of a research horizon paper than something you'd implement next week, but the framing of a third pre-training axis is a useful mental model. We're used to thinking about scaling laws in architecture search. Adding training objective design as an equally important axis for generation is a perspective shift worth internalizing. All right, paper three is something I think is going to resonate with anyone who's built or deployed LLM agents in production. It's called File System-Based Memory for LLM Agents: Organization, Evolution, and Sustainability. And yes, it's about something you might have already seen in the wild, agents that store their long-term memory as a directory of markdown files. So the setup is this: when you deploy an LLM agent that needs to remember things across sessions, one of the simplest and most common approaches is to just give it a file system. The agent reads and writes markdown files, organizes them into folders, and manages its own memory store. It sounds almost too simple, but it's actually the default for a lot of deployed systems precisely because it's easy to inspect and debug. But here's the thing: most research on agent memory has been about bespoke memory systems with custom retrieval mechanisms, vector databases, knowledge graphs, and so on. This paper asks a question that's been largely ignored. Does the file system approach actually work? Like, can an agent really keep that directory organized as memories accumulate, conflict with each other, and go stale over time? The authors identify two core assumptions that are typically untested. First, that the agent can keep the memory store organized as it grows. Second, that the organization remains useful, meaning the agent can actually retrieve and use what it's stored when it needs it. What they find is essentially a stress test of file system memory under real conditions. Memory stores get messy. Agents create redundant files, forget to update stale information, organize things in ways that made sense early but break down later. The sustainability question is interesting. Does the memory system degrade over time, or can it self-heal? The paper also looks at what I'd call memory evolution. How should a well-designed file system memory handle conflicting information? If the agent writes something in January and then gets contradictory information in March, how does that get resolved? Naive file system approaches just have both files sitting there, and the agent might retrieve the wrong one. For practitioners, this is immediately actionable. If you're building agents with file system memory, and a lot of you are because it's the path of least resistance, this paper gives you a principled framework for thinking about the failure modes. Things like file naming conventions, hierarchical organization strategies, and periodic consolidation passes are probably worth building into your system design. The sustainability angle is particularly important for production systems. A memory system that works great for the first 100 interactions and then degrades is a support nightmare. Understanding the decay dynamics here helps you plan for when to trigger cleanup routines or impose organizational constraints on the agent. Paper 4 comes from Archive, and it's a domain-specific one, but it's a great example of infrastructure thinking applied to a real scientific workflow. It's called AskHIM, Claim-Centered Infrastructure for Chemistry Literature Synthesis. The core problem here is one that any scientist or knowledge worker will immediately recognize. When you're doing chemistry research, you often need to synthesize findings across dozens or hundreds of papers. Like, you might want to know every reported yield for a particular reaction class or every temperature at which a certain property has been observed. Right now, the way this works is you search PubMed or Google Scholar, get back a ranked list of papers, and then manually hunt through those papers for the specific claims you care about. It's incredibly tedious. Existing retrieval-augmented generation systems, RAG systems, have made progress here, but they still fundamentally return document-level results. The document is the unit of retrieval. AskHIM argues the unit of retrieval should be the claim itself, with full provenance, meaning you know exactly which paper, which section, which experiment a specific finding came from. This is a meaningful architectural shift. Instead of here are five papers that are relevant to your question, you get here are 15 specific claims from across the literature, each one traced back to its source, that directly address what you asked. That's a fundamentally different and more useful output for a scientist. The provenance-carrying claim structure is what makes this interesting technically. Each claim in the AskChem system is essentially a structured unit that packages the finding, its context, and its citation together. When you query across papers, you're querying over these claim units rather than over document embeddings. The cross-paper synthesis capability is also worth highlighting. Chemistry is full of situations where the answer to a question lies at the intersection of multiple papers. One paper measured property A, another measured property B, and together they imply something about C. Claim-centered retrieval makes that kind of synthesis much more tractable for both human scientists and AI agents. For the ML practitioners in the audience, even if you're not in chemistry, the architectural pattern here is generalizable. Claim-centered RAG, where you pre-chunk the literature into structured, provenance-tagged claims rather than document chunks, is a design pattern worth stealing for any domain where precise, citable findings matter. Legal research, clinical literature, regulatory documents, this approach applies broadly. The AskChem team is also thinking about this as infrastructure for AI agents doing scientific discovery, not just human researchers. As AI agents get deployed for literature review and hypothesis generation, having a retrieval system that returns grounded, traceable claims rather than document lists becomes increasingly important for reliability and auditability. Last paper today, and it's a meaty one, SignumM, an online reliability memory for LLM-based multi-agent systems. This one addresses a problem that's going to become increasingly important as we build more complex AI systems. How do you know which agents in a multi-agent system you can actually trust? So here's the scenario. You've got a central LLM agent that's coordinating with a bunch of peer agents, each specialized in different tasks. The central agent gets responses back from these peers and needs to incorporate that information into its decisions. But here's the problem. How does the central agent know whether to trust what a peer is telling it? In human organizations, we solve this with reputation and track record. You trust the colleague who's been right about similar things before.
You're more skeptical of the new hire, but existing LLM memory systems don't model this at all. They mostly just record what happened, not how reliable each participant was. The authors introduce SignumM, where the sigma is the actual Greek letter, representing a kind of summation of reliability evidence. The system maintains what they call an online reliability memory. Online here meaning it updates continuously as interactions happen, not in batch. Two types of evidence are tracked. First, historical competence evidence for individual peers. Basically, how often has this agent been right about things in its domain? Second, peer relationship evidence, meaning do these agents tend to agree or disagree with each other? And when they disagree, which one tends to be correct? The peer relationship evidence is particularly clever. In multi-agent systems, you sometimes get correlated errors. Multiple agents give you plausible but wrong answers because they share a common flaw, or were trained on similar data. A central agent that just looks at whether peers agree with each other might be fooled by correlated mistakes. SignumM tracks these correlation patterns to help identify when apparent consensus is actually just shared error. The online nature of the system is critical for production deployment. You don't want to retrain or batch update your reliability estimates. You want the system to update its trust model in real time as new evidence comes in. This is essentially Bayesian updating applied to agent trustworthiness. For practitioners building multi-agent pipelines, and this is increasingly common with frameworks like LangGraph, AutoGen, and similar tools, this paper provides a principled architecture for something most teams handle ad hoc right now. You might already be doing something like, let's weight the output of agent more heavily because it's been more accurate. But SignumM gives you a systematic, learnable way to do that. The safety implications are also worth noting. Multi-agent systems are a potential attack surface. A compromised or adversarial peer agent could inject bad information. A reliability memory system that tracks and downweights consistently anomalous agents provides a layer of robustness against both accidental failures and potential adversarial behavior. That's a meaningful property for any production deployment. All right, that's five papers. Bias localization in neural networks, end-to-end generative pre-training, Phyfe-System agent memory, claim-centered literature retrieval, and trust-aware multi-agent memory. Really broad and genuinely interesting batch today. Huge thanks again to our sponsors. Ada for making production AI deployment actually work. Ago Consulting, that's Ago for silicon expertise from AI accelerators all the way to full SOC design. And Zen Semiconductor, the silicon industry umbrella with Ada in the family, turning research models into production inference with the Glow compiler. If you enjoyed today's episode, check out our sister show Git News AI in the Ada Podcast Network. It's a great companion for staying on top of what's shipping in the open source AI ecosystem. Links to all five papers are in the show notes, so you can go deep on whichever ones caught your attention. If this is useful to you, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It genuinely helps us grow. See you next time on Unzip.